Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Idea Park, a new media agency nurturing online relationships between you and your most valuable customers. Online at ideapark.com.
A powerful link for Apple.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Brian Watt. Apple Computer's board of directors has a new member. He won't have far to travel to meetings at the company's headquarters. Eric Schmidt is just up the road in Mountain View, California. He's the CEO of Google. You might have heard of it. Not just anybody gets to serve on Apple's board. If the profile of CEO Steve Jobs isn't high enough, there's always former Vice President Al Gore. Meanwhile, the Taiwanese company that manufactures Apple's iPod is defending itself. It has struck out at two journalists who accuse it of shoddy working conditions in the factory. The company Foxconn alleges the reporters defamed it, and with backing of a local court in southern China, it's taken some drastic action against them. Jocelyn Ford reports.
The Taiwanese manufacturer is demanding the two journalists pay over $3.5 million for damaging its reputation, and a local court has frozen their personal assets. Foxconn says the reporters made exaggerated claims about poor factory conditions. The journalists wrote workers were forced to do overtime, got less than minimum wage, and lived in crowded dorms. When Apple investigated, it found workers put in more hours than allowed, but were not forced to do so. Journalism professor Lee Kun says defamation suits are new to China.
Before, whatever media says, because media are government, you know, nobody would think of even challenging that. But now the public realize that they are businesses and the public realize their own rights.
Other newspapers have been rallying to support the journalists who write for a business paper in Shanghai. The government-controlled China Youth Daily said the case sends a dangerous signal to society that courts can be used to suppress freedom of speech. In Beijing, I'm Jocelyn Ford for Marketplace.
There's yet another hearing today on immigration. This one takes place near Denver and will focus on immigrants' impact on budgets. Typically, these hearings are stacked in favor of one point of view. And as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, that may be the case here as well.
You may know this joke. An economist applies for a job and is asked, what's 2 + 2? The economist shuts the door, lowers the blind, and whispers, what do you want it to be? That's what many immigration analysts say about today's hearing. It will be what Colorado Senator Wayne Allard wants it to be. The focus is local budget impacts. Louis DeCipio of UC Irvine says if you ask that question, immigration is all about red ink.
Most of the costs of the services that are delivered to immigrants are delivered by state and local governments, particularly public education and also emergency health care.
On the other hand, he says most immigrants pay Social Security taxes, big-time revenue for the federal government.
The Social Security system is surviving a little bit longer because of the contributions that immigrant laborers are making.
If you look across all levels of government, DeCipio says immigrants may be a net plus. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Yesterday, Wall Street got some mixed signals early on. Falling oil prices, good. Falling consumer confidence, bad. But then came a nice hint from the Fed about interest rates. The Dow gained 18 points, a tenth of a percent, finishing at 11,370. The Nasdaq was up 11, a half a percent, to 2172. This is Marketplace. Did you know Starbucks serves coffee? Well, the company has a new marketing plan that aims to remind you of just that. Jason Parr explains.
Starbucks is feeling the heat of summer as same-store sales failed to measure up to expectations in the most recent quarter. Starbucks is facing increasing competition from McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts in the premium coffee market, but investment analyst Don Gear says one likely culprit for sagging sales is Starbucks' focus on juice blends and other cold drinks this summer.
And those led to longer lines. As people saw the longer lines, they decided not to stay in the store and went elsewhere. Secondly, there could well have been some sort of an economic impact from the effects of higher gasoline prices.
Gear says with cooler weather on the way, the company needs to repeat former growth rates to keep investors happy in the coming quarter. I'm Jason Parr from Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report, produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Medtronic, partnering with physicians, patients, and diabetes educators to provide better glucose control for long-term diabetes management. Information available at Medtronic.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
This is Marketplace. I'm Brian Watt. Hurricane Katrina cast a spotlight on the plight of the poor in New Orleans. Now, as the Crescent City struggles to rebuild, commentator Robert Reich argues the needs of the poor have been ignored.
Even though the national economy keeps growing, the number of impoverished Americans has not diminished. About one out of four New Yorkers, for example, is living in poverty. New York's mayor has appointed a commission to come up with ways to reduce that number. Before Katrina hit, about one in four residents of New Orleans was also living in poverty. Today, New Orleans' poverty rate is much lower. But that's not because it did anything New York or any other city should try to emulate. New Orleans lowered its poverty rate by having a flood that wiped out the homes of its poor and then made it hard for them ever to come back. More than half the people who lived in New Orleans before Katrina have still not returned, especially the poor, and they have no place to return to. Their former houses are in rubble. Housing projects are closed. Poor neighborhoods like the Ninth Ward are still devastated. Inexpensive housing, even rental housing, is hard to find. It's an old story, really. Areas of any town or city where the infrastructure is most ignored, like the industrial canal levee that burst on the morning of August 29th a year ago, have the lowest property values. So that's where the poor live. When there's a flood or a leak of toxic wastes or any other calamity, these are the places most likely to become uninhabitable, which means the poor often have to leave. And then the political and moral question is whether anyone cares enough to help them return and rebuild. Sometimes cities actively try to get rid of their poorest citizens. Not long ago, officials in Fall River, Massachusetts, tried to destroy a low-income housing project there and not replace it with any other affordable housing. Other cities have been known to give the poor one-way bus tickets out of town. But more often than not, it's simply a matter of doing nothing. Last September, President Bush promised more than $60 billion for the first stages of getting New Orleans back on its feet. But he made that money contingent on the city of New Orleans developing a recovery plan. The mayor of New Orleans appointed a commission to do that, but nothing came of it. A year after Katrina, and there's no plan to redevelop its poorest neighborhoods, no housing for the displaced, barely a trickle of money to help them. And since the poor who used to live in New Orleans don't have their own money to rebuild there, they'll probably stay where they are now, in Houston or Dallas or Birmingham or Jackson, Mississippi, at least until those cities figure out how to reduce their own poverty rates and send the poor somewhere else.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich now teaches public policy at the University of California at Berkeley. Maybe you've got your own take on the impact of last year's hurricanes. Tell us at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Brian Watt. Thanks for joining us, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
Later on Marketplace, we'll do the number.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.